You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Hello, everyone. This is MLB.com Extras, American League Central Edition. I'm Anthony Kastrovitz. Thanks for tuning in the penultimate, that's one of my favorite words, penultimate week of the 2015 MLB season. There's still a heck of a lot going on in the Central. The Royals are going to nail down the AL Central title this week, but there's still a lot of intrigue over who should be nailing down their games in the ninth. We'll talk to Jeffrey Flanagan about that. The Twins and the Indians are both still mathematically alive in the wild card chase and facing each other this week. We'll check in with Rhett Bollinger and Jordan Bastian in advance of a huge series in the Twin Cities. And we'll also get the latest from Jason Beck on the Tigers and Scott Merkin on the White Sox. Thanks for listening. Let's get to it. And the Royals will probably clinch the AL Central this week. Their magic number is down to 3, so it could happen as soon as Wednesday. And they got a love that it'll likely happen at home. But still, Jeffrey, and the story with this club right now is not so much the clinch, but just the funk. And the question in baseball is, can the Royals shake the flu, as Ned Yost has called this the stretch where they dropped 11 of 16. What do you make of it here in the last 2 weeks? How important is it to finish strong here?
I think it's going to be important. They're not playing their best ball right now. That's pretty obvious. As you know, when teams go into slumps like this, it's usually not just one thing. It's kind of everybody contributes to it. And, you know, one day the offense doesn't work. The next day the starting pitching's bad. They've had some bullpen eruptions. And some bad defense, too. And, let's throw in some poor base running yesterday. Hit three guys picked off yesterday on the bases. I think that was 5 for the weekend, and that's just ridiculous. They're one of the best base running teams in baseball. So I think what that tells you is that there's a little bit of a concentration lapse going on. And Ned's not particularly worried about it. You know, they bashed the ball and had 19 hits yesterday on Sunday. And he's just hoping, waiting for their bats to come around. That's a pretty good sign. So, if they're hitting, I think Ned is pretty confident that he's got the pitching will work itself out, and they'll be back to playing Royals baseball again.
A little bit of trivia here, and it might prove trivial, but the Royals are 7-12 in September. Only 3 teams in the wild card era have won the World Series after a losing September, and the last was the 2006 Cardinals. So it's been a little while on that front. Certainly like to see the Royals turn things around here in the last 2 weeks.
As a matter of fact, I just wrote about that, too. This is my off-day story. And last year, the Royals kind of limped into the playoffs, too. They were actually 10-10. And the Giants, of all teams, I think they were like, I have to go back and look, 7-12 going into the playoffs. So, you know, it's not critical that you're just scorching because you just get hot one time in the playoffs. And we saw it with the Royals last year, the wild card game. Like, it just flipped the season. So I think that's another reason that I'm not overly concerned.
Yeah, the Royals weren't even hot in that game. They were hot sitting on, basically. And then from there, just rode it from there. How about the bullpen, Jeffrey? Obviously, that's a huge talking point right now. Greg Holland with his 5th blown save of the season Friday. His ERA in the second half is over 5. Holland, Davis, and Herrera, and even Ryan Matson, they were all down on Saturday. Sunday's win, as you mentioned, was a blowout. So, you know, there was no need for Ned Yost to change anything, but things are obviously coming to a head there. What do you expect for the closer situation here?
Well, it's a tough one. I mean, Ned's really in a tough spot because Greg Holland's been his man for the last 4 years. You know, they don't get to the Game 7 of the World Series last year without Greg Holland. He's been a warrior. He's a competitor, a fierce competitor. But his stuff is not the same, and his command's not the same, which is even worse. I think Ned can live with the fact that there's been, you know, a noticeable velocity drop down to 1993, and you can still get guys out because that's, you know, basically 80% of baseball pitchers throw in that range. You know, you don't have to throw 99 to get people out, but you better spot your fastball pretty well, like Chris Medlin did yesterday, for the most part, because Medlin doesn't throw very hard either. He's 90, 91, 92, so you can get, and he's got a, and Holland's got a ferocious slider, so. But it doesn't do any good if your fastball is just kind of lame and it's all over the place, and that led to the blown save. So, anyway, I do think that he's going to probably shuffle it a little bit. The problem is you still have to use Greg Holland somewhere. I mean, you're not going to just PFA him. So, I mean, he's got to have a spot somewhere late in the game. Do you put him in the 7th, 8th? Where do you put him? I think that's the thing that Ned and his staff right now are kind of mulling over, because in the ninth inning, it's got to be Wade Davis's job because he's one of the best relief pitchers in baseball. And you, at least if you blow something in the seventh and eighth inning, your offense has another chance to come back. But in the ninth, you have no chance. So I think that's why ultimately he's going to make the switch. He didn't have to yesterday. Like you mentioned, they were all down yesterday anyway, and he got an off day on Monday. So maybe on Tuesday he makes that call. I think he might just flip it and go flip the HDH and go, I guess it would be HHD, with Holland, Herrera, and Davis. So I think that's probably what he's going to do. But I'll tell you what, that's going to be a tough conversation to have with Craig Holland because he is a competitor. And he still thinks he can get guys out in the ninth. So it'll be very interesting to see how that all works out.
Yeah, sometimes guys will take the burden off the manager and just go to him and say, look, I know I'm not getting the job done, but obviously these are competitive men in a competitive business. Those conversations are not always so easy. There have been some difficult conversations about Johnny Cueto the last few weeks. Can't go a week or even a day without talking about him. But his start in Detroit on Friday night, 7 innings pitched, 2 runs allowed. He was hit hard early and needed an outfield assist to get out of the first inning, but still an encouraging outing overall. What did you think?
Oh, that big time. I mean, they made some adjustments. Kind of interesting stuff, too, because Sal Perez is a tall catcher. He's 6'4", 6'5". And when he is in his squat, he sets a target that's a little bit higher than shorter catchers. And I really hadn't thought about that, but it apparently was bothering Johnny Cueto. And so, and he didn't want to say anything, you know, the first, you know, 5, 6, 7 starts, because as he said to Ned, that hey, Sal Perez is a gold glover, he's an all-star, I'm not going to tell him how to do his job. But he thought he needed a lower target because he's one of those pitchers that throws to the glove. And so he just thought a lot of his pitches were up in the zone because the target was too far up. And so they made a very subtle adjustment. We saw it all weekend. It was kind of interesting. We've never seen Sal do this, but he was doing it with the whole staff. As a matter of fact, he was down when nobody was on base. He was down on one knee, getting that target, you know, knee high or even lower. And for the most part, the pitchers really responded, including Cueto, who had his best outing in over a month. So I'm not going to stand here and say that Cueto is fixed, but that was certainly an outing that looked a lot more like Johnny Cueto. Got a lot of ground balls, kind of got his rhythm back, his tempo back, and it looked like the guy that we saw when he first showed up with the Royals.
The Twins lost 5 of their last 6 going into the second to last week of the regular season. Their wild card position slipped from 1 game back to 2.5 games back. Rhett, what do you think, man? Can they pull this off? Will they pull this off? What's going to happen there in the Twin Cities?
Well, it's going to be tough. I mean, their postseason odds right now, I think I was looking at it on MLB.com. The baseball perspective, postseason odds, and I think right now they're right around 5%.
Yeah,
they're even behind the Indians right now.
We're behind them. Yeah,
they play the Indians now, I think, 7 of the next 10 games. So that's going to be kind of a big indicator there. I mean, they certainly have a chance. You know, the Astros are starting to play a little bit better recently after their slide, after their 4-game sweep against the Rangers. Certainly, it's within the realm of possibility. 2.5 games isn't that far back, and tied with the Angels. No one else is going to jump right now. So it could happen. I think, like you said, with the odds, you know, I'm a math guy, so if the odds say 5%, I'm not going to go out on the line and say they're going to make it. But I do think they're going to be in it toward the end there. I think that last series at home against the Royals count. But a lot of it really is going to have to do with how they play against the Indians in the 7 games, because the Indians have some tough starting pitching, especially in that series coming up, having to face, you know, Carrasco and Kluber and guys like that.
You got to live dangerously, right? When the odds say 5%, you got to bet your house and your wife and your kid. You got to throw it all on the line. You can score big. That's how you end up bankrupt, pretty much. How tough is the Tyler Duffy decision? Maybe it's not tough at all. He's basically their best starter right now. Really good against Sunday. 2.06 ERA and 4-0 record in his last 7 starts. But obviously, he's in new territory with the innings, so they, you know, don't want to ruin the kid going forward, but it's impossible to take him out of the rotation right now, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really tough. I mean, like you talked about, this guy has been their best starter pretty much ever since he's kind of come back up that second time. That first start there against the Blue Jays was very forgettable. Then went back down to the minors for a start and then came back up. And ever since then, he's been lights out, a totally different pitcher. And he's been absolutely legit in terms of the strikeout rates, way up. He's a guy that gets a lot of swings and misses with that curveball. initiates a lot of weak contact. He's done a pretty good job of keeping the ball in the park outside of that game against the Blue Jays. So really, you look at the peripheral stats, too. I mean, it's legit. So it's kind of impressive in a sense that this is a guy who started at Double-A Chattanooga, wasn't really on too many, you know, top prospect radars or anything. And he's developed into a guy that can be a starting pitcher for them going forward. But that's the big thing is, you know, it's his first year in the majors. They want him to be part of that rotation going forward. And, you know, you kind of got to watch those innings. The good thing is obviously he's a big guy, kind of a big frame, can handle that. I think that was maybe a reason why Jose Berrios, another pitching prospect they did shut down, was shut down, is that Berrios is probably around 5'11", smaller frame guy. You worry about maybe his durability a little bit more going forward than a guy who's bigger like Duffy. But, yeah, it's kind of one of those tough things where they want to keep throwing him out there because he gives them a good chance to win. But at the same time, you also don't want too many innings on that arm. After, you know, I think last year, I think he's already up close to almost 25 to 30 innings more than he did last year. And you don't want to go too much higher than that. And then all of a sudden have him come in the next season and deal with some sort of arm injury and set him back, you know, kind of going forward in the future. Because I think next year they want him to be a big part of that. So, yeah, they're kind of in a tough bind and trying to find ways to back him off a little bit and use off days to their advantage. But with the way that Tommy Malone has struggled recently, the way that Phil Hughes didn't do too well in his first start back from the DL, they're definitely trying to lean on him as much as they can, but also within reason, trying to make sure that they don't overextend him or overuse him too much this season.
Well, one thing that's fascinating about this season and the fact that the Twins are still mathematically in this mix is just from this podcast perspective, Red, it seems like, you know, we do these every week, and it seems like 60 or 70% of them, we've had some kind of rotation discussion, a guy going in, a guy coming out. There's been a lot of movement within that rotation all year, and that continues now. With Tommy Malone nursing a tired shoulder, and Phil Hughes, who you mentioned, you know, missed a few weeks with a herniated disc, and he comes back, has a rough go of it, and he's in the bullpen. Now he's back in the rotation in an important series against the Indians. He'll be in there on Wednesday. Just sticking with Hughes' situation, you know, he's pitching in this, you know, like I said, what is a big series. What are your expectations for him after what we saw last week?
Yeah, I mean, with Hughes, he wasn't even supposed to be part of this rotation. I mean, Mulder told us a few days ago that he wasn't going to start again this whole homestand and potentially maybe not again this season. But then when Tommy Malone lasted, you know, just over an inning there, I think, what, an inning and a third his last time out,
yeah,
he decided to take him out of the rotation and put Hughes back in there. And Pelfrey at least turned in a decent outing, which was much needed. So it's, like I said, the rotation, we talked about it all year, and right, it's been one of those things where it's kind of been just good enough to keep him in the games, but a little bit inconsistent. All of a sudden, sometimes, you know, Pelfrey goes on a streak where he actually does pretty well, and then all of a sudden goes in a streak where he can't get anybody out. And even Kyle Gibson has probably been their, you know, best overall starter in terms of consistency. He's even kind of had some of those spells where, you know, his August was, you know, really struggled. So it just seems like there's always somebody in there struggling. They got to, you know, move out, or someone's hurt, whether it's Hughes or in Alaska. You know, Malone had a nice hot streak, and all of a sudden now his last two starts, he's kind of fallen off. So maybe that's what happens with rotations. They don't really strike many guys out. You can kind of just, you know, bad luck, that kind of stuff, and play into it. There's a lot of balls are hitting the play, that kind of thing. But, yeah, the rotation, to its credit, though, has at least kept them in these games. I mean, last year, about 2 years, you know, really they finished in the last in the majors in ERA from the starters. So at least they're starting to get some of that, you know, better ERA and better pitching. But like you said, it definitely is just kind of a shuffling kind of the deck throughout the season. And curious to see kind of how that goes next year, if they can get a little more stability. And obviously a full season of Urban Santana next year should help as well.
I am joined by the birthday boy, Jordan Bastian. JB, how old are you today?
I'm as old as Jesus, 33.
Wow. He accomplished much more than you in this
33
years.
Yes,
you're doing
did.
Very well.
You know, that's
buddy.
Fine.
And, what's that?
I said, that's fine. I will let you, you know, he has a pretty good legacy. I don't need to mess with that.
I'm sure that on your birthday/off day, you could think of nothing better than to join the podcast row and talk a little tribe with me. I appreciate that. There's a lot to talk about with the Indians here in the last 2 weeks of the season. Still mathematically alive for the AL wild card. You must keep hope alive. At the very least, they can ruin Minnesota's season. Big series in the Twin Cities this week. Seven more games against those guys. But, you know, I know from the tribe's perspective, it's been hard to take it too seriously for a while now. But when you go into the last 2 weeks with you know, a still mathematical chance. In fact, baseball's perspective, has given the Indians a better chance than the Twins, even though they're a game behind them. How much scoreboard watching is taking place in that Tribe clubhouse right now, if at all?
You know, I think it sounds cliche, but I think what's been so important for this team over the last 2-3 months is the fact that they really have kind of put on that horse blinder mentality and, you know, taking it day by day. I mean, honestly, earlier this year, I think some of the guys in that room were a bit overwhelmed by the hole that they had dug. And I think there was some looking ahead to the fact that, oh, no, you know, we're already kind of looking towards 2016. And I think there was some stress from some of the players that were in there. And, you know, they got some fresh blood in that clubhouse and some young players and some other guys acquired via trade. And, you know, as we've talked about in the past, I think there's something to be said for when you bring in guys who weren't here for those first 2 months. You know, they don't have that in the back of their mind about how bad it was. You know, so for them, you know, they've really only experienced, you know, a good chunk of this team has only experienced kind of this strong run since the trade deadline. And I think that goes a long way. And you have some of the leaders in there, Brantley, Gomes, Kipnis, Kluber, guys that can really assert themselves as the quote-unquote veteran leaders now, even though some of them don't have a ton of years in the big leagues under their belt. But I think that combination and kind of that horse blinder mentality that Terry Francona really preaches, I think that's been really important for them. And we've said it all along in the last 2 months as we've talked about this, let's just see if they can get back to 500 and then start looking at it. And I think they kind of took that same approach. And, well, they've hit 500 a few times. Now they're trying to get over that hurdle and make a run here in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, there's been a bit of an invisible wall, I guess, when it comes to getting over the 500 mark, but a good opportunity to do that in Minnesota against a Twins team that's basically been struggling this month. I believe 9-10 in the month of December going into that series. They've, of course, hung around the wild card just because all you got to do is be around 500 to be in that wild card race still. But yeah, it would certainly, this is kind of it for the Indians. They take care of business this series. You still take them seriously. They get swept or lose this series. You know, it would be hard to take them seriously, but you mentioned the young blood, the fresh blood, and we talk about this guy just about every week, but Francisco Lindor, you know, for my money, JB, you look at, I don't just look at wins above replacement, but I also kind of consider the storyline that the Indians are still relevant. Of course, the Astros are still relevant as well, but I think there's been more surrounding Carlos Correa since his call-up. I think Lindor is the Rookie of the Year favorite as of this moment. What do you think?
Yeah, I kind of lean that way too, and kind of like you said, I was talking to a veteran writer recently about this, and you know, he was kind of leaning towards Correa, and you know, the initial reaction was that, well, Houston, you know, is a playoff team right now. And it's, well, I mean, if the Indians finish 2-3 back of the Astros in the wild card race when it's all said and done, I mean, does 2-3 games really sway a Rookie of the Year vote? You know, for two guys that didn't join the team since June, their respective teams, and I think, even if you throw out the numbers, you know, at the point when Correa joined the Astros, you know, I think they were still in a pretty good position. When Lindor joined the Indians, we were thinking they're pulling the plug on this year and looking towards 2016 in the future and want to see what they have and looking for any kind of spark. And we weren't really taking the team seriously as a potential playoff contender for this season. You know, so I think the impact that Lindor has had on his team since his call-up has been huge. And again, you and I kind of have that benefit of having watched it in person every day and being in the clubhouse and seeing what this kid has brought in terms of his energy and kind of being infectious to the players around him. You know, that's been very apparent since he's been up here. And then beyond that, then you look at the numbers, and I think they're pretty close. They're different style of offensive hitters.
Right.
Lindor seems to be a little bit more all-around offense. Correa obviously has the power numbers in part of his game. And then you look at the defense, and Lindor ranks above him there as well right now. And Lindor ranks one of the best shortstops in baseball right now. So I think I'm kind of leaning towards Lindor. Again, you kind of have that benefit of seeing him every day and seeing the impact he has. But I think the impact is real, and I think that's one of the main reasons the Indians are where they are.
Back, not that it wasn't a foregone conclusion for quite a while, but it still had to be strange to be watching a Tigers game where they got eliminated from the AL Central race. It's been a long time since we've seen that.
Yeah, it had. I'd forgotten what that felt like. course, I mean, there's been a lot of stuff that I've covered this year that I'd forgotten what it's like. This is kind of, you know, near the top of the list. But, yeah, honestly, and this is no surprise, the players didn't really react much to it. A lot of them saw it as a foregone conclusion for a long time anyways. A lot of guys just kind of shrugged. But really, it did note officially the end of an era. Four straight division titles is something that I think, especially in this day and age, you don't see very often. And I don't know, aside from the Cardinals, if we have a chance to see another dynasty like that, simply because I think the way baseball is set up now, parity rules. And I think going along with that is the ability for teams to get better quickly and the difficulty for teams to really stay on top of their game for that extended of a period of time. It really was a confluence of the Tigers being really good for a long time, having cost-controlled pitching, being able to sustain that and make some additions and subtractions to support that, and Miggy and in the middle of their order, with the rest of the division really being in a rebuilding mode. And we finally got to that point now where not only are the Royals up near the top of their game, you see the Twins up and coming. You see the Indians now making a charge. The White Sox are trying to get better. So this era, especially in the Central, this could be a pretty turbulent era for a few years here where we don't see a dynasty like this for a long time.
It is. It's so hard to repeat in this game, and that's why you got to give so much credit to the Tigers for that run. Tough to see it end here in 2015, and a lot of questions for them going forward to the offseason. We will, of course, delve into all of those on this podcast in the future, I'm sure. But just staying in the present, Beck, I saw where Victor Martinez said that this is a season that's going to teach a lesson to a lot of people, starting with this clubhouse. What do you think he meant by that? Is there something more there than just, you know, we had a bunch of injuries, we had a tough year? Is there anything more pointed in that regard?
Well, I think there was a twofold message there. He said it was for people in the clubhouse. He also said it was for the fans, which understandably got a mixed reception. But I think the overall message is similar, that you can't take success for granted. And I think, certainly from a fan standpoint, it's a natural feeling that when you see a team like this win year after year after year, you kind of come to expect it. You saw fans grow accustomed to that in Cleveland there during their dynasty. We certainly read plenty about Atlanta fans becoming accustomed to that, and I think Atlanta players became accustomed to that during that incredible run of division success that they had. And I think even in some other cities now, you see it. The Cardinals, to some extent, although certainly you don't want to take away anything away from their fans, they're incredible. Where else am I thinking of? Anaheim, I think, is one place. The Dodgers, places where you have sustained success, that comes about. And I think that comes about with players, too, that you can't sleepwalk through a division, and not that the Tigers sleepwalk, but you can't sleepwalk through the early stages of a race and just assume that things are going to click together. And I think maybe that's something that Victor meant, that you have to appreciate what you have, but you have to be able to turn it on, not just at the right time, but pretty much all the time when you have the opportunity. This team had chances to get on a winning streak and kind of make an emergence, and it didn't happen. They had injuries here after enjoying really what was an incredible run of health for their major contributors, aside from Victor Martinez's knee injury in 2012. They weren't able to take advantage this year. There were a lot of factors in that. I think Justin Verlander talked about it, that they really didn't have their full squad together for stretches. And then when they did, they weren't able to take advantage. Miguel Cabrera talked about it even too. I had a great conversation with Miggy last week about just how it just felt like things went wrong for this team. And it was such a weird feeling being in September with no playoff implications that it was hard for them to maintain intensity.
That actually leads to my next question about Miggy. This has been a tough month for him. We're just not accustomed to seeing him struggle the way he has. And you almost wonder if there is a motivation issue there at this point, because he is so accustomed to playing for something here. We've seen him grind through some really difficult injuries down the stretch of important seasons. He came back to a lost cause when he came off the DL here this year. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think there is a little bit of a motivation issue, and I hope people don't take that the wrong way. This is a guy who played through a groin tear, not just a groin strain, a groin tear a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
He played through a broken foot last year, basically, to try to get these guys into the playoffs and try to make a run. And he did so with incredible numbers for a guy who was hobbled, especially last year. But what he was able to do, I think, was just, you don't see that from guys very often. Really, you don't see that. I haven't seen that type of performance from guys with those types of things ever. And now that he's relatively healthy, although you kind of wonder how much a calf strain is still bothering him, now that he's healthier than he was in the last few years going into the stretch run, there's kind of nothing pushing him here. And you can kind of see where, not that he's taking at bats off, but that intensity, it's tough to replicate when you're so used to having those implications on the line at this time of year and you don't have it. Now, you can argue that a fourth batting title in 5 years should be motivation enough. But I really do believe that maybe he's had so much individual success at this point that the major void in his career is a World Series title. He wants to win more so than he wants those individual honors. Although, for his sake, you hope he can finish off this batting title, and that years down the road, he can appreciate what four batting titles in 5 years means, because there's only like eight or nine guys in history who've been able to do this. I hope fans too appreciate this. I think it would further cement his status really as one of the greatest right-handed hitters of all time, in my opinion.
Scott Merkin has endured it all. Merk, we're going to try to look at some positives here. One positive, Carlos Rodon. The way he's pitching here down the stretch was really good on 11 days rest the other night in Cleveland. I noticed that his changeup usage has really increased exponentially as the season's gone along. Just a matter of a young kid getting confidence in his secondary stuff. Is that pretty much what's going on there?
Yeah, the description of Rodon stuff, it sort of reminds me of the description of Chris Sale when he first came to the White Sox. Only Sale worked more extensively out of the bullpen. I think he had, a year and some change in the bullpen. I remember Kenny Williams, the general manager at that point, said that he had this great changeup, and he said once you get to see it, it's going to be one of his best pitches, if not his best pitch. And that's you heard the same stuff about Rodon. When Rodon came in, you heard the great slider, great makeup, and that changeup really was going to make the difference, and it has. I think he's just gained confidence overall, and he took his lumps early on like a lot of young pitchers do. Look at, we've said this before on the podcast, look at Clayton Kershaw's first year or two and his numbers there. And, he's really been great for about his last 11 starts. But the interesting thing is he's had a lot of repeat starts. Like, he's faced the Mariners twice. He's faced the Angels twice. I think he's faced the Indians three times. Now, you're bound to have that. I mean, Sale's pitched six times against the Twins alone this year. So it's interesting to see him handle teams, in repeat mode. Sometimes that's a pitcher's advantage if they have something that they know they can, get a team out. But a lot of times, especially with the young guy, it's for the hitter's advantage. So, yeah, Rodon has shown, as this year has gone on, that this is going to be a viable, 1-2 guy with Chris Sale at the top of that rotation.
I don't know if the repeat factor comes into this, but since you mentioned Sale, 5.4 ERA in September after a 3.2 ERA from April to August. His fielding independent pitching mark has also ballooned. Actually, statistically speaking, Mark, this has been the worst month of his career, and of course, it's not over yet. He's got a chance to redeem himself a little bit. But what do you think is going on with Sale?
It's hard to say. It's interesting. We were talking about that today here in glorious Detroit, in that, you know, Sale, he's still throwing the ball hard. He's still got, you know, good movement on his pitches. It's just kind of what's plagued Samardzija, who's starting game one of the doubleheader as we speak, and that's just location. And, you know, I mean, the line was a little deceiving against the Indians because he only gave up one earned run.
Right.
But, you know, he gave up, what, six or seven all told, including a grand slam to Quintana, another home run to Lindor. I've seen more home runs against him. I know the numbers aren't his career high yet, but I've seen more home runs against him in these last, you know, five or six starts than I have in a long time. And I think it's just location. I think even the best of pitchers, when they're not locating, can, you know, can get hit. And that's what's happening with him right now. It's kind of strange. And the other sense I think I get is that, you know, the bar was set so high with this kid where he got, you know, what, eight straight starts of 10 strikeouts or less. And I think or 10 strikeouts or more, of course. 10 strikeouts or less wouldn't be that impressive. And I think his ERA was below 2 during that time. So, you know, you're bound to hit a little bit of a run like that. But it is kind of strange when you look at 5 straight Chris Sale starts that have ended up in White Sox losses. He hasn't lost all those. And in fact, in one of those starts, he pitched 7 brilliant innings against Boston to give up a run. But when you look at 5 straight Sale starts, that's the guy you figure. And that's the guy who he talks about this, that he's the guy who should end your streaks, and it just hasn't been going that way.
Yeah, and it's a shame. It probably, what's going on here in September has probably pulled him, I'm sure it's pulled him out of the Cy Young conversation. Probably.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I don't know what you think about that at this point, Anthony, but, you know, Keuchel, we still thought, even when, you know, before Sale's streak, was kind of the favorite. And then he got hit hard by Texas, and he's got those huge home road splits. You know, Chris Archer has got numbers sort of like Sale, a decent record, good ERA, huge strikeout totals. Sonny Gray has got a solid ERA, hasn't pitched very well his last 2 or 3 starts and plays for a really bad team. And then you got, you know, the old standby who's been great for a long time, that's David Price, and Price may end up winning it. You know, Price being part of Toronto and with his numbers being very impressive, too. It's not like you're giving to him by default. But, yeah, there are a lot of guys who have held that favorite status. It'll be a very interesting vote, I think, once the year comes to a close.
It will. As we sit here today, I'd have to go David Price. Took over the ERA lead, ERA plus lead. But Sale had a nice season until September. Maybe he can redeem, like I said, maybe he can redeem himself these last 2 weeks. Merck, you mentioned we're recording this doubleheader just getting underway there in Detroit. So this could happen by the time you folks listen. But Jose Abreu is one home run away from beginning his career with 2 30-homer seasons. Merck, can you name the other two players to do that?
I would like to go for Albert Pujols and Mr. Ryan Braun from the Milwaukee Brewers.
Ding, ding, ding. Merck's been reading his game notes, ladies and gentlemen. Way to go, Merck.
And can you name the only player who's done 30 and 100 his first 2 years? I think he did it for many more than his first 2, actually.
30 and 100?
30 homers, 100 RBIs his first year. Only one other guy besides Abreu, if Abreu gets there.
Albert Pujols.
I'll give you a hint. His name has just been mentioned in the last 30 seconds.
Albert Pujols.
There you go. I was saying it's not me.
All right.
I don't have the numbers in front of me. I think he's 7 RBIs away from 100, so he's got a shot.
Yeah.
He should get 30, and he's still got a shot at 100, too, I think.